What can we do to help get more Americans to appreciate what we have in this country? Having written a lot about America's story, including America's Christian history, and then seeing people risk their lives to try to come to this country to get a shot at what you and I enjoy virtually every day, but unfortunately many Americans take it for granted. Well, there's a new book out called A Great and Grateful Nation, From Grievance to Gratitude. This is by historian Jane Hampton Cook. The book has been described as a beautifully crafted keepsake celebrating America's 250th birthday, which helps one to experience the American Revolution as never before through a compelling blend of stunning new visuals and beloved classics in a quick, accessible, and deeply inspiring read, end quote. Jane Cook, the author of this book, now joins me on Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb. Jane, it's always a pleasure to talk with you, and it was fun when you and I were on a program together on Newsmax just the day before July 4th.
Yes, that was a lot of fun to see each other, and we've talked, you know, several times, and we just both have this love for our country and for our history and wanting to share that and help other people feel inspired as well.
So let's talk about the concepts in this book you have, which is called A Great and Grateful Nation. And I want to start with the subtitle, From Grievance to Gratitude. So what do you mean by that?
So, you know, sometimes the American Revolution gets scaled down to no taxes on tea, but there were a lot of grievances. When you read the Declaration of Independence, there are 27 bullet points of grievances, anywhere from, you know, they weren't receiving warrants and their houses were being searched. They were being forced in Boston to house members of the military from England, and free speech and all of these things, these violations. Were grievances. And I think one of the ways they processed those grievances was there were many times in their culture, multiple times a year even, when they would give thanks to God. And that the Continental Congress often asked the people to set aside a day for giving thanks and prayer and sometimes fasting. They had a day like that on May 17, 1776, as they were working on this concept of declaring independence from England. They asked the churches to pray. And so I heard John Irwin, a movie producer who's the producer of the new movie Young Washington, he was talking about how psychologists will tell you that grievance or disdain cannot be held at the same time as gratitude, that they cancel each other out. And so I really think the founders found those moments to, you know, really seek God and to give thanks for the good things. You know, after George Washington, he was at Valley Forge. He found out that the French were now their allies. And so what did he do? The next day he told his men, we're going to have a day of Thanksgiving. We're going to have a parade and we're going to give thanks to God for this new alliance. And that was in the middle of, you know, May 1778. It certainly wasn't, you know, a Thursday in Thanksgiving. And so they had this culture that where Thanksgiving was part of it. And I don't think it means that they were, you know, grateful for the really bad things, but they found something to be grateful for. And they just, you know, were humble before God. And I think that's a really great picture for us to think of today.
Okay, earlier, just a moment ago, you mentioned the 27 laundry list, 27 points that Thomas Jefferson wrote up, basically saying, okay, look, the king and the parliament are doing this, 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 and this. Well, just recently I heard a commentator make this this note. He said, well, the Declaration of Independence is racist because in that document, you know, one of those 27 points, basically Jefferson's talking about how the king and the parliament are soliciting Indians, and he uses the word savages, to actually wage war against us in very savage ways, which, you know, frankly, that was kind of true, you know, in terms of, you know, old people being killed, babies being killed, you know, et cetera. And so I'd like you to comment about that, because that was a problem, you know, where Indians who had a different view of ethics, and they were not, you know, trained in the Judeo-Christian view. And so therefore, you know, that's why Jefferson called them savages. And then that's why a modern person says, oh, this Declaration of Independence, it's all racist.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. And that's the kind of the thing that stands out to me about that, because the British were looking to ally themselves with people who were against, you know, the colonists. But, you know, we see this in the French and Indian War in the 1750s. It's a misnomer to call it the French and Indian War, because both France and Britain in that war had allies who were indigenous people. You know, native tribesmen. And, you know, a lot of it just depended on who the tribesmen were most mad at, you know, the French or the British in the 1750s. And, you know, I don't think that erases the, you know, the Declaration of Independence was not a completed task. It was the beginning. These were the seeds of liberty. And that those seeds, some of them fell on, you know, fertile ground, and they grew immediately. Some of them didn't. And so the seeds of independence were planted on July 4th, 1776, but the America 250 is our harvest, because we can look back and see those moments when we lived up to the Declaration of Independence through, you know, different civil rights movements, especially, you know, in the 1800s, abolition, women's voting rights, those kinds of things. And so, you know, that's what America 250 is about, is celebrating this country that we gave birth to, you know, 250 years ago.
You know, it's interesting. It reminds me of a phrase from the Constitution, which comes 11 years later after the Declaration of Independence, which it's predicated. The Constitution is predicated on the Declaration of Independence. And they say in the very preamble, in order to form a more perfect union. It's like, we haven't arrived yet, but we're working at it.
That's right. And that's why we call it the American experiment, right? It's always, we're always trying, you know, to get things right. And something that has stood out to me in doing the research for a great and grateful nation, and just thinking about, you know, the issue of slavery, John Adams took the Equality Clause from the Declaration, and he put it, not quite word for word, but pretty close, into the Massachusetts Constitution in 1780. And then 3 years later, a judge in Massachusetts declared that slavery was unconstitutional based on Adams's constitution that he had written for Massachusetts. And they cited the Declaration Equality Clause as the reason. So the first state to abolish slavery did so because of the belief that all men are created equal and that they are endowed from their creator with unalienable rights of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And so that belief system is in some ways very simple. It's very biblical, because, you know, all, we believe that men and women are created in the image of God. And, you know, there hadn't been a country founded on something like that before. You know, nations were founded on kings and who had the most power and the most military might. But we were created as a country on this idea. And I think that's what makes it so special. And that's, you know, that's what has made it so long lasting, is to, you know, is the ingredients, you know, that made it up. And you mentioned the 27 bullet points in the Declaration. Well, I, in my Great and Grateful Nation book, I go through and I point out where there was an injustice in the narrative that became part of the Bill of Rights. When Mr. Brown was told by the British, you've got to get out of your factory, which was also his home. It was a wool factory, and you've got to let our men sleep here. And Mr. Brown said, no, I'm not going to do that. And the British went somewhere else to camp. But that is an example of, you know, we don't require Americans to house members of the military in their homes. That's where that comes from. And so, I point out those grievances and how we, you know, put them in the Bill of Rights. And that's why the Bill of Rights, the first 10 amendments to the Constitution, now is so important.
And where does God fit into all of this?
You know, it's the belief that we are created male and female. He created them, it says in Genesis, in the image of God. And the people who, you know, founded our nation, they came from Christianity, and they sometimes, you know, didn't get along necessarily always with the different denominations of Christianity, and they had to learn to tolerate those differences. But, you know, John Adams said that the preservation of liberty depends on both the intellectual character of the people, but the moral character of the people. And the belief that people of faith, that this experiment would work best, you know, with people who had faith in God, and that that moral character was important to its survival.
Excellent. Okay. So with the great and grateful nation from grievance to gratitude, was there any particular challenge in writing that book?
You know, there wasn't. I wrote it over a period of years, you know, worked on it here and there and kept coming back to it. And what probably the challenge is just, you know, for a while, patriotism wasn't something publishers were printing. I had a Christian publisher tell me one time that we you know, patriotism doesn't sell. And I was really grateful when one of my publishers from years ago, I sent them a copy of the book, and I'd had it printed just as a sample, and they loved it, and they were ready. They had kind of been through a downtime financially, but it's AMG and God and Country Press, and I was so happy that they published it and recognized what it had to offer. You know, and I use beautiful pictures. I use those classic pictures that you've seen, the artwork of George Washington crossing the Delaware. But then I also have some new images. I have an image that I created where George Washington is in the forest. He's surveying. He's a young man. And there's a beam of heavenly light coming down on him. And that's where I talk about his miraculous survival when he had four bullets go through his coat and two horses shot under him during the French and Indian War. And he believed that it was because of the divine hand of providence that protected him, you know, beyond all human expectation, for he had, you know, four bullets go through that coat and two horses shot under him, but he was unhurt. And so he wrote a letter to his mother and his brother to tell them, in case they heard incorrectly that he had died in that battle, that he had not died. And I really think that miraculous survival really shaped George Washington's later life. He experienced something that few had ever experienced. And ministers of the time period in the 1750s predicted that George Washington's life was spared by God for some important purpose. And of course, that purpose came 20 years later when he stepped in as commander of the Continental Army in 1775 and led the military. And then he willingly gave up power. And that is just unheard of, you know, and that really sets us apart too, as a government, that we, you know, people give up power.
All right. We've talked about a little bit about Thomas Jefferson, a little bit about George Washington. Anything you want to say about Samuel Adams helping us to become a great nation?
Well, you know, Samuel Adams is so great because he was the organizer, and he was the one going to the taverns in Boston. He was hearing the grievances of the people. You know, the Boston Massacre took place in 1770. Adams found out that the governor of Massachusetts was actually privately writing letters saying, my goal is to make these people more dependent on me. But then outwardly to, you know, Adams, he would say, no, you know, I support you all.
That was Thomas Hutchinson you're talking about?
Yes, Hutchinson. Yes. And so Hutchinson was proved to be a phony. You know, he wasn't fulfilling what he had promised to Sam Adams. And Sam Adams and John Hancock, you know, started the Sons of Liberty, and that organizing. You know, we have the right to protest your government in the Bill of Rights. And a lot of that is because Adams and Hancock organized those men, those young men of Boston, to, you know, protest, and to protest peacefully in many cases. And that was something I discovered, is that, wow, there were a lot of petitions, people signing their names to a petition to the government about, hey, you're sending us to go to court, you know, 100 miles away from where we live. That's unjust, that we have to go to, you know, a really huge inconvenience of travel. And that was also something we put, you know, a right to a speedy trial in our Constitution.
And the right to redress grievances from the government. Okay, Jane Cook, we're out of time. JaneCook.com. Again, the name of the book we've been talking about is A Great and Grateful Nation.